Nine, this is also a briefing, a public hearing, and a decision. Periodic status review, Taylor's checker spot butterfly, and Columbia white-tailed deer. Hannah, you're going to lead us on this?
I am. Chair Smith, Director Unsworth, Deputy Director Storr, members of the commission, thank you again for having us here. We're here to talk to you about our periodic status reviews that we've been conducting for our endangered species here in the state. These slides here, I'm going to go through very quickly because you've seen them before. Just a quick reminder that we do have 45 listed species here in the state, and we are required through the WAC to review the status of those species every 5 years and present our recommendation on their status to you, and that's what we're doing here today. The recommendations fall into these bins. Endangered, threatened. We do have a sensitive category or does not need to be protected under the list. I'm not going to read the definitions. I think you all know them already. Just a quick reminder on the process. So it begins with a one-year open a press release for folks to contribute information to us about the species demographics, the habitat, the threats, the conservation actions, any new data that we can use to compile our the PSR, the periodic status review. The documents are prepared by our wildlife biologists with all that contributed information as well as partner information, other entities. Then there's a rigorous internal and external peer review process where we reach out to experts both within the agency and without to provide comments and refine the documents. Then it goes through a 90-day open public comment period. Those public comments are integrated, the responses are compiled, we finalize the document, and then we bring it to you, and that's what we're doing here today. So last time I was here was in June, and we had very diverse taxa that day. We were talking about killer whales and streaked horned larks, and today we're sort of following that same trend of diversity. We're going to talk to you about the Columbia white-tailed deer all the way down to a small endemic butterfly. And we'll have time for questions after each one. It is public hearing and then decisions today. And with that, I'm going to jump right into Columbian white-tailed deer. Before I do, the document, so all the work to prepare the PSR, to put the PowerPoint together, to generate the information, refine, et cetera, was done by Jeff Azarad, one of our wildlife biologists, who was unable to be here today. So instead, you get me, and I'm going to do my best to convey the information that he would have brought to you. And with that, I'm going to need my glasses. So first, natural history of the species. So it is a subspecies of the more widespread white-tailed deer. It's a Pacific Northwest endemic, and we do have two subspecies here in the state, and essentially one occurs on the east side and one occurs here on the west side. They're almost indistinguishable from each other. The Columbian white-tailed deer is a little bit smaller, but really the only way to tell the difference between the two is either from their geographic location or genetic analysis. First, this map. So there's two maps here on the left, the historical distribution, and on the right, the current distribution. I have to apologize about the right side. Those green, there should only be one blob in each location. So the green needs to scoot down and sit on top of the yellow. I'm not really sure what happened there, but there it is. So on the left, the historical distribution used to range over about 25,000 square miles from about here in Olympia south through southern Oregon. Now, there are two distinct sort of isolated populations, one that occurs along the lower Columbia River and one that occurs in southern Oregon near Roseburg and Douglas County, Oregon. We're going to talk most about I'm almost done talking about the Oregon population. We're going to talk most about the Columbia white-tailed deer along the actual Columbia River, and that occurs on both sides of the river, so both in Oregon and in Washington. Briefly, their legal status. So they are listed under the Federal Endangered Species Act. In fact, they were one of the first species listed when the act was enacted in 1973. They're also listed as endangered in Washington and endangered in Oregon. Okay, here's the last bit about that Douglas County, Oregon population. In 2003, it was delisted from the federal endangered species list. So now the only one that remains listed under the feds is the northernmost population along the Columbia River. And there is a proposal, a proposed rule out to downlist that species from endangered to threatened. And we expect final rule to come out sometime in October. And again, the feds are looking, of course, at both sides of the river, and our regulations focus only on our state, and so not the deer that are on the Oregon side. Okay, here is the lower Columbia River. This yellow outline there is the range, estimated range of the Columbian white-tailed deer. It's about 100 square miles, and the black bits, polygons in between are known occupied sites. Essentially occurs from the Shillipoo Wildlife Area near Vancouver, downriver to the lower estuary islands that are part of the Lewis and Clark National Wildlife Refuge. A little bit about their historical habitat. So their preferred historic habitat was upland prairie, deciduous forest, open woodland that was once common throughout southwest Washington. As is the story for so many, much of that habitat has been lost to land use conversion, conversion to conifer forest, and more recently, urban development. So although most of their preferred habitat is lost, they have adapted slightly to other habitat types, notably the floodplain habitats of the Lower Columbia River. And though those habitats are marginal relative to what was once available, they do show preference for some certain characteristics of those habitats, including the open understory, deciduous forests — they mostly avoid conifer forests — and an affinity for habitat adjacent streams, so that riparian habitat. A little bit about their population status. They were, you know, historically abundant and were nearly extirpated by about the turn of the century, so about 1900. At the time of their listing in their federal listing in 1973, it was estimated 300 to 400 deer occurred, and then their population estimations have fluctuated throughout time. It went up, you know, in 1984 there were 750, down in the early 2000s to around 550, and then the most recent estimate we have from 2015 is the highest estimate we've ever had, so about 950 deer. So that's good news. So what are some of those factors? What are the threats? What are some of those factors affecting the populations? As we talked about already, habitat loss has been a primary driver, primary threat. So the species is now restricted to a narrow sliver of land along the Lower Columbia River. And then within that narrow sliver, their habitats are fragmented. So there's isolated pockets of habitat surrounded by natural and artificial barriers. And so that fragmentation results in little opportunity for the deer to move between habitat pockets, as well as interactions with each other. So they're restricted to the floodplain. So as you can imagine, flooding is a major threat to Columbian white-tailed deer. And those floods can occur, naturally occurring causes like heavy rain, even climate change or projected sea level rise is a major threat, or sort of management-induced flooding, as would occur with dam manipulations or a breaching of a dike or even fish enhancement actions. Relationships with other species can affect the Columbian white-tailed deer. So coyote are a known predator of juvenile deer and have had severe impact on the population. There is some documented hybridization with the co-occurring black-tail deer, as well as competition for resources with species like elk. So those are some of the main threats. What are we doing about that? What are the management activities underway? So there is a group, WDFW, as well as U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Cowlitz Tribe, the Columbia Land Trust, and other partners are working together on a number of management activities. some of which, one of which is habitat protection. So even prior to the federal listing, in 1971, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service established the Julia Butler Hansen National Wildlife Refuge for the Columbian white-tailed deer. And since that time, about 7,000 additional acres of habitat throughout the range have been protected for the purposes of white-tailed deer. And not only is habitat being protected, but being restored. So restoring components for cover and other important resources, food resources for the deer, have been happening. The Fish and Wildlife Service is leading an effort to control coyotes that has been successful in reducing the high levels of juvenile mortality on the deer. And so more deer are then reaching maturity and able to reproduce and then contribute to the population. Translocations have been a major management action, and you can see here some, you know, numbers of how many deer have been moved from where to where, and that really began all the way back in 1984, and some of the most recent translocations occurred in 2014 and have had mixed success. And then finally, because we have little information about, you know, the makeup and number of animals needed to sustain the population, so population persistence, as well as to inform those management actions like translocation or habitat protection, et cetera, DFW and partners are engaging very soon. We just signed the contract and getting it moving, population and habitat viability analysis, so those results can help inform those management actions and moving forward. So although the recent estimates are up, the highest estimates we've ever had, and there is considerable recovery momentum, there still are a lot of threats, and they still are occurring only on this very small area, and we have this question about population viability. And for those reasons, we recommend that it be maintained as an endangered species. We did receive one public comment encouraging maintaining the classification as endangered. I believe this was a citizen out of Wakayakum County. And with that, I'll do my best to take questions, or I have a more informed person here to answer if you need them, if you give me any hard ones.
Thank you, Anna. Yes. So you touched on population viability, but it just seems like you said fragmentation. Little tiny populations then that are distinct or separated. Do we know anything about its impact on viability, or are we just sort of translocating just haphazard? Or
well, I think that's part of the question. Sorry,
but yeah, yeah. Well, do we have knowledge that we're basing these decisions about translocation on it? This point, or that's what's to be studied?
I think that's part of that's the unknown uncertainty that we're really looking to this PVHA, the population habitat viability analysis, to inform those management actions so we can be more successful. Yeah. I mean, I just look back to Sandra.
The initial translocations that happened in 2013-14 were in response to a potential breaching of a dike at the Julia Butler Hansen Refuge. That's what kind of initiated that. Translocation from that, given multiple additional discussions and trying to start another population on Richfield National Wildlife Refuge, they continued those to try to at least establish a start of a population at Richfield. But any future discussions should be informed by the PHVA to make those decisions.
Okay. I'm sorry, that's Sandra Yonker. She's the Wildlife Program Regional Program Director out of Region 5.
Any other questions? Well, thanks, Anna.
My pleasure. And with that, I'm going to give it over to Ann Potter.
Right?
Yep.
Yes. Hey, good afternoon, Chair Smith and Director Unsworth. Oh, you're leaving.
I'll be right back.
Okay. Deputy Director Storr, I hope you're staying, and commissioners.
He doesn't like butterflies.
Apparently. That's not a very auspicious start. My name's Ann Potter, and I'm a wildlife biologist in the Diversity Division. For the last 20 years, much of my work has focused on conservation of imperiled insects in our state. And I'm here today to report to you on our recent status review for the state endangered Taylor's checker spot butterfly. So Taylor's checker spot is a Pacific Northwest endemic. the range of the butterfly, as you can see somewhat represented on the map there, is southeastern Vancouver Island to the southern Willamette Valley in Oregon. Historically, it was documented on over 80 sites, and just a little caveat to document it on 80 sites and a little perspective. As you can imagine, it's likely that for an animal that's small and not everyone knows how to identify it, that, and there weren't focal surveys in the past, that there were likely many more populations that are not part of that 80, but we know of at least 80. Currently, outside of Washington State, the butterfly persists on one site in Canada and two sites in Oregon. In Washington, the historical locations are 45, and if you look at the map on the left, you can see the representation of that. The extirpated or now populations that were documented that we know are gone are black. The brightly colored butterflies exist today. There's one white butterfly up in south of Lopez Island that we have not been able to survey that property. And then you can see some green butterflies that are reflect recent reintroduction efforts of Taylor's checker spot. In 2006, at the time of state listing, the butterfly was known from 10 locations. Since 2006, it's been extirpated from 7 of those 10, and our continued survey efforts have located the butterfly on 5. We call them new, but they're not really new to the butterflies, but they're new to us. Today, that adds up to 8 sites that are inhabited by this butterfly in Washington. The listing status is 2006, it was listed state endangered. In 2013, it was listed federally endangered. And these are all related to low number of populations, and many of those populations are small and or isolated. Patterns of recent extirpation. So as you can see in the slide that I mentioned earlier, even since 2006, we've lost populations. And habitat loss, of course, that's in common with many imperiled species, habitat loss, degradation, and fragmentation. Now let's go into the natural history. So here's a chart that represents the life cycle of the butterfly. Taylor's checker spot is non-migratory, so they're living at their sites, I hate to use this term, but 24/7, 365 days of the year, they're there. They're univoltine, which is a term that insect people use, which really just means that they have one complete life cycle each year. And don't worry, there won't be a test. They have one thing I want to call your attention to in the life cycle is they have a long period of dormancy. That whole gray area where it says diapause is actually a period of dormancy when the larvae are dormant. So you can see from that life cycle chart that they spend about 3/4 of the year as a caterpillar or larva. A little bit more explanation of terms, pupa up there is also another term for chrysalis. Each of the life stages has microhabitat requirements. Now, the habitat, they're a really considered a habitat specialist. They inhabit rare, short stature grass and herbaceous vegetation systems. That includes low elevation prairies, montane meadows, some coastal bluffs and stabilized dunes, and also some forest clearings and balds. Balds are areas with meadows that are in an otherwise forested matrix. The caterpillars and the adults both rely on plants for their food. The caterpillars feed directly on plants, and the adults, the butterfly, requires floral nectar for nutrition. So this is just a little chart that shows on the left, the eggs are laid on those two plants that are presented there, harsh paintbrush and English plantain. The larvae, before that long gray dormant period, feed on those plants. When they wake up from dormancy in February, March, they start eating the same plants their eggs were laid on and additional plants. The breadth of their menu, acceptable menu, increases. And then on the right just shows some of the nectar species that are important to the butterfly. This is just kind of an example of how they're habitat specialists, because these larval food plants, they have to be present in a habitat and they have to be abundant in a habitat for the butterfly population to persist. So the population status of the eight sites, you can see a lot of the sites are in Clallam County. There are three sites with estimated greater than 1,000 butterflies, three sites that we estimate are at several hundred butterflies, and one site that our best estimates are there's fewer than 100 butterflies currently. In the South Puget Sound region, there is a single extant site, and it occurs on Joint Base Lewis-McChord. And there are anywhere, you know, varies over time, 1,000 to 10,000 butterflies have been estimated there in the last 10 years. And in the South Puget Sound region, there are reintroductions underway at four sites. So limiting factors for those, for the butterfly, is primarily the fact that there's only eight populations remaining, and many of those are small and isolated. There's also habitat loss and degradation and fragmentation, which there's a legacy of that from the past, and it also continues. That's from land conversion, invasive species, including invasive natives. You can see in that picture those Douglas fir trees. Douglas fir is a native, but historically, because of fire in this landscape, these trees didn't invade open grasslands and prairies. Other limiting factors include military training that I mentioned earlier, that large population that's extant on Joint Base Lewis-McChord. So it can either be direct from being run over or trampled, or it can be indirect impacts to the habitat. There is a newly identified pathogen to one of the primary host plants that affects available food. And then these butterflies are sensitive to temperature, which means they're sensitive to weather, which means they're also sensitive to climate. A little bit about management and recovery. So we have conservation efforts have been really strong and underway with a collaborative team since the state listing and even starting before. So there are state, federal, and nonprofit partners. There are management plans for most of the occupied sites. WDFW worked through DNR, forest practices, and stakeholders and developed a voluntary approach that's been very effective for the forest practice nexus. And then recently, the Fish and Wildlife Service has begun working on a recovery plan. WDFW leads survey and monitoring activities, including the surveys include searches for new sites, you know, following up on potential leads and identifying new sites. The monitoring that's done of existing populations is to address questions of abundance and within site distribution, and also to verify extirpations. The habitat restoration has been another important part of conservation efforts for this butterfly. In Clallam County, it primarily includes removing encroaching trees and shrubs. The condition of the sites there is such that simply, and I don't want to imply that it's simple because it's a lot of work, but removing trees and shrubs results sometimes in the areas, if they're in close proximity, being occupied by the butterfly even the next year. Very different situation in the South Puget Sound region, where there's more degraded habitat, where there's a suite of actions that are involved to control invasives and then reestablish natives, including a use of prescribed fire. There's also the reintroductions, which I mentioned earlier. Captive rearing is underway at both the Oregon Zoo and the Mission Creek Correction Center for Women. So that's kind of unusual. You probably don't see that in every presentation. There's a very unique effort at Mission Creek with the Department of Corrections and the Evergreen State College Sustainable Prisons Program. It's very effective.
Sustainability in prisons.
I thought it was sustainable prisons.
They changed it.
Oh, they did.
Because
okay.
of that reason.
Thank you, Hannah. And there are active reintroductions currently underway at 4 sites. And we were all very excited in 2016 when one of those sites met the criteria for what we call establishment, meaning that there were more than 250 butterflies in 5 consecutive years, and the butterflies are using an area more than 50 acres in size. So a lot has been done to work on conservation of this butterfly. There's been considerable efforts to recover Taylor's checker spot. However, the butterfly remains highly vulnerable to extinction throughout its range. This, again, is largely related to the fact that there are a low number of populations, and the populations are small, and many of them are isolated. Continued habitat loss and a legacy of habitat loss, and continued threats. So therefore, we recommend retaining endangered status for Taylor's checker spot. We did receive one public comment, and it encouraged the commission to fund more surveys and habitat restoration. This is a citizen, I can't remember which county they were from, but that was the public comment that we received. So with that, I'll go to questions. Thank you.
That'd be a great example for citizen science.
Yeah.
I don't know. Have you thought you've been moving in that direction?
We've used citizen science projects for a lot of species of greatest conservation need butterflies, but it's kind of tricky with this butterfly, especially now since it's federally endangered. So we all have to have permits to do the work that we do. And it's also incredibly, I think you should join us for some surveys. It's really, you have to leave your whole life open for a month and be able to go.
I'm there.
Okay. So you have to, you're going to love this though. We can only do surveys between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. and the temperature has to be above 55 degrees, and there has to be sufficient sunlight to cast a distinct shadow, and it can't be rainy or too windy.
That's perfect.
And it's in the spring, so there's a lot of flexibility.
Is there a glow involved?
Mimosas.
It's actually really fun, and I would invite any of you to join us. Yeah.
Sorry I asked that question. Thank you, Anne. Any other? Okay. There's no public input on this, so do I hear a motion?
Chair, I move to retain the Columbian white-tailed deer as endangered and the Taylor's checkered spot as endangered as presented by department staff.
Thank you. Second? Okay. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you.
Okay, Brad, you go with the girls. I'll take it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.